Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about United Healthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
Chase Thomas podcast. The Chase Thomas podcast. My nephew needs me to record. See, I already hate it.
All right. Hello, and welcome back to a Monday night edition of the Chase Thomas podcast. We're back on Mondays because the NFL season has concluded. So NBA is back on the Monday editions of this very podcast, and a Chase Thomas podcast lifer, I guess, is what I'm going to refer to Jovan Bua as, of The Athletic, on this very podcast. Jovan, good evening, sir. How are you?
I'm doing well. I feel like I'm studying for a medical degree with how much I've learned about Achilles over the past 48 hours. Otherwise, things are good.
Yeah, we'll get into the Anthony Davis situation and what all of that means and what you've learned. You're going to share for the class. There you go. It's like a homework assignment. I'm excited for this. What did you do for Valentine's Day, Jovan? Was your Valentine's Day a success?
In theory, it was a success. I took my girlfriend to Catalina. I surprised her. And neither of us had been there before. And I don't know if you watched the show Love, the Judd Apatow show.
I watched the first season. I don't think I watched the second season. How many seasons? Is it still going?
No. So it's three seasons. Actually ended in 2018. But it was one of my favorite shows. So
it was good from what I remember. I thought it was good from what I remember.
I'm a big Judd Apatow guy, so pretty much anything he does, I'll at least watch once. But this she hadn't seen, so we rewatched it. And not to spoil anything, but the final episode, they are in Catalina, and we had talked about how we both wanted to go, and you know we're both from the LA area, so it was just kind of one of those things that was on our bucket list that we hadn't done. So I surprised her. We went up on Saturday because the Lakers and the Nuggets had a game on Sunday, so it wasn't really possible for me to go then. And we had a good time. You know, we ate and drank and walked around, and you know, there wasn't really much to do because of COVID. And Catalina had actually just reopened that weekend. But the way back, we took the last boat out, and let me tell you, never take the last boat out anywhere. Because the water was so choppy, And you know, without going into too much gory graphic detail, it really just became a shit show. And
were you heaving, you or your girlfriend?
Oh,
heaving?
Yeah.
Oh, no. Yeah,
but both just blowing chunks, man. It was,
are you serious?
And it was like, it became like, it was like 50, like the first 15, 20 minutes, it was like a 1 hour boat ride back. So the first 15, 20 minutes were okay. But then around, like, you know, I started to feel nauseous. She started to feel nauseous. And then all of a sudden you just heard like a chorus across the boat of like, everybody started throwing up at the same time. And then you had like people like trying to get up to go to the bathroom and just like stumbling and falling. And like, it was just like the paramedics had to come because there was like a pregnant lady who got really sick, and it was just a complete mess. And yeah, I learned one, to never go on a boat again. But if I do go on a boat again, I'm never taking the last ride out.
Oh my goodness! I never thought this story was going there. It started off so great, a nice weekend in Catalina, to just Armageddon on the ride back. That's wild. I don't even remember the last time I was on a boat, but I don't seem to recall I got seasick all that much. I know I have not fared well with turbulence. Do you think you fared worse? What do you think you would rather deal with? Really bad turbulence or what you just dealt with this weekend?
Turbulence, because at this point I've taken so many flights. I'm like a professional sleeper on flights. Like, I was already a really good sleeper, but then traveling so much, it took me to a different level where like I can knock out within 5 minutes on any airplane and pretty much sleep until the end of the flight no matter what. Actually, a funny story on this subject was, I was flying back from All-Star and going into Utah. And I was on a flight with Tony Jones, my colleague of The Athletic, who covers the Jazz. Mm-hmm. And we actually got struck by lightning. and I slept through. So I'm actually good. Apparently lightning hit our plane and it was like shaking and stuff. So I slept through that. But I could not sleep through this madness in the middle of the ocean and just jumping wave to wave, and it was really, really bad.
Goodness. I remember when I was coming back from New York one time, I think I was a senior in college, and I like the last person to come on this flight. It was a pretty filled flight, and we were flying out of LaGuardia, and this kid who, I think he was a high schooler, he looked exactly like Justin Bieber did in like 2010, and he just stumbles in at last, like, I don't know how he made it onto this flight. But I kid you not, Jovan, he sits down next to me. Like, he gets the middle seat next to me in the very back of the plane. I got the window. I don't know if you're a window or aisle guy, but I'm a big window guy. And this kid puts on his white headphones. I'll never forget this. Just puts on the white headphones and just falls over asleep. Like, immediately just knocked all the way unconscious. Like, I've never seen anything like it. It spooked me. I didn't know if this person was dead. I don't understand it. And then we get to Atlanta. I kid you not. Just like it didn't happen. Just pops up perfectly fine, gets up, walks out, and it's just like he's a totally different person. I've never seen an on and off switch like that, but I was very jealous.
That sounds about
what you do?
Similar to me.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's not fair.
I'm usually off before we're taking off, or like right as we're like ascending, you know, into the clouds. That's when I'm knocking out. So
interesting.
It makes flying much easier.
Interesting. I need to fly more, I guess, to experience this. But I don't know. That's interesting. Who have you been watching the most? Like, being on the Lakers beat, you have to watch obviously a lot of Lakers. But outside of Los Angeles, who have you found yourself watching a lot or gravitated to in the last week?
I'm not going to lie, I haven't been watching much. I've just been kind of so, because, you know, it is being on a beat has definitely shifted my NBA watching kind of experience, just because, you know, it's like even when I'm not watching, I'm like looking at NBA.com stats and writing, and like I'm just nonstop thinking about the Lakers. I will say I think that the two teams, and these aren't, well, I guess the three teams that I've been most interested in from a watching perspective have been Golden State, the Clippers, and the Nets. I just find myself enjoying those three teams. Obviously, I have the familiarity with the Clippers, and I think they're playing a slightly different style this season. I know we'll get into that a little bit later, but Golden State with what Steph's doing, and full disclosure, he is on my fantasy team, so there's a little bit of an extra something there. And then Brooklyn just kind of trying to figure out what the heck is going on over there, and if they're going to like lose in the first round or win the championship or somewhere in between, because it's hard to get a pulse on this team, and they've been so up and down. I guess trending upward, but still kind of had some weird results over the past couple of weeks since the Harden trade. So I would say those are the three teams I've been keying in on from afar.
Interesting. I've been watching a lot of Knicks and Emmanuel Quickley and how Derrick Rose is going to fit in, and just trying to get a pulse on why they're a playoff team as of right now. And this has been a good year for Tom Thibodeau, not only because the Knicks are playing out of their minds, but also because the Wolves are the worst team in basketball, and the drop off from Tom Thibodeau's Wolves team to where they are now is night and day. I don't know if you've had the unfortunate. I don't know when the last time. Have the Lakers played the Wolves this season? I don't even recall a Lakers Wolves game.
Yeah, they played them. It was the third game of the season.
Okay,
they smoked
been a
them
bit.
Without AD. Yeah,
yeah.
I've seen a little Wolves.
It's bad, man. Ryan Saunders, he's not long for that job. And I understand that Carl Anthony Towns has been out for a lot of the season, but that is a really, really bad basketball team that is really poorly coached, and a number one overall pick who, he looks like a worse Cam Reddish, is what I've seen, which is not what you want out of a number one overall pick. But don't forget, folks, you can subscribe to this very podcast on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. Go check out ChaseThomasPodcast.com today and become a patron. If you like my writing, go to patreon.com/ChaseThomasWriter. It's easy and it helps the show continue to grow, and you get all the access to all my previous episodes. And also subscribe to The Athletic, where Jovan writes all the time covering the Lakers. So go do that if you're not The Athletic subscriber. Go do it. It's a great website and I very much enjoy it. I want to bounce around the league, Jovan. We have a lot. I want to throw a lot of stuff at you, and I have a list, and I have a running list. I just have documents on documents. I don't know how you are with this sort of thing, my friend, but I keep a bunch of notes, and I have notebooks and legal pads and everything. And these are some things that I wanted to pick your brain on. So we have to start with AD. You mentioned at the top of the show that Anthony Davis is dealing with some rather scary injury stuff. I'm saying stuff because I am not a doctor, and I'm still not entirely certain what all of these words thrown together actually mean for Anthony Davis and his season. Share with the class, Jovan. What have you found in your deep dive into what Anthony Davis, the Lakers power forward, is dealing with right now?
Yeah, so I have to give a big shout out to Dr. Rajpal Brar, who on Twitter is at 3CB Performance. He's a big Laker fan based out here in LA, but he's a physical therapist, sports scientist, data analyst. And we spoke last night for about 10 minutes, just going over various parts of the AD injury. And he called it. He said that, and this is basically just from him seeing the injury and seeing what AD had said over the past few days. He was like, I don't think it's, directly his tendon and tendinosis. And I think it's a swelling of the surrounding area. Potentially, tenosynovitis, which don't ask me to say that three times fast, but basically inflammation of, there's like a tendon sheath around the tendon that kind of protects it, and sort of an inflammation of that, because essentially, the Lakers had said he had tendinosis, which is a degenerative condition with the tendon of the Achilles. And had he had a bad case of that, that would be something where he wouldn't have been able to return as quickly as he did, because he only missed a couple games last week. And that's not something he would have necessarily been able to play through. He probably would have had to have more time off. So AD actually clarified that last Friday. He said, it's not my actual Achilles tendon. It's the area around it. So Dr. Brar, kind of walked me through some of that, but he predicted, he was like, I think it's going to be minimum him out until the All-Star break. And we got 3 weeks till the All-Star break. That's a pretty good, like, you know, set of time for AD to rest and rehab and recover. So he was like, you know, I would not, you know, my best guess is he's out at least through the All-Star break. So that was what ESPN reported today. And the Lakers said that it is a right calf strain. So not a right, last night they had said a right Achilles strain. Now they change it to a right calf strain, which obviously is a little bit higher in the leg. And so I guess this is all to say that this isn't necessarily a serious thing. I think it from everything I've read and just kind of heard, it sounds like if AD just rests for a few weeks, he could be back post All-Star break and kind of just back to normal. But it is something to monitor, and it is a situation that, kind of similar to, potentially Kevin Durant and what we saw with him, where, like, if that gets re-aggravated, like, the Lakers have to be very cautious. And if he does have tendinosis, which ESPN reported, that is a degenerative condition. It is similar to what Kawhi had in his quad, and that caused him to ultimately start, load managing and resting games. So this is something to monitor. We don't know the severity of the tendinosis. That's not something that's been shared yet. But, so I think for Laker fans listening to this that are freaking out, like, AD will be back. He will be fine. This is something to monitor, though, and this is something that could get more serious in the future. But as long as he doesn't try to continue to play through this, he should make a full or close to full recovery and then basically be back to normal, in early to mid-March.
Do you suspect this will weigh on him mentally at all?
Yeah, I do, because, he had this quote where someone asked him about putting pressure on himself to play, because there was this interesting dichotomy between his answers Friday night and his answers last night. Because Friday night, after the Memphis game, which is the game he returned, someone asked him, is this something you're going to have to deal with all season? Like, is this going to go away? And he was like, well, the one way for it to go away would be for me to rest, but I'm not interested in resting. Like, I don't want to miss games. Like, I want to play. So I'm just going to try to manage it and get through it. So that kind of set up the sort of narrative of, like, well, if you needed to rest to heal it, you chose not to rest, and then immediately the next game you re-aggravated it. But then afterward, he kind of changed his tone and said, well, actually, no, like, this was the best I'd been feeling. Like, I didn't have any pain today. And it had made a lot of progress, and we did every test in the book, and I passed all of it. So, everyone was confident in me playing. So, I think there was a little bit of a tone shift there, because it was like, did you need to rest? Did you not need to rest? That's kind of still unclear. But he mentioned that, because he's had so many injuries throughout his career, especially in New Orleans, he kind of got that injury prone label. It's something that he wants to play through and he wants to overcome, and he doesn't want to be an injury prone player, a guy who's missing 15, 20 games every season. So I think that was kind of an element of pride for him in this situation, where he was like, I'm going to play through it. If they say I can play, I can play. I don't need to necessarily be too cautious, but obviously that backfired. And I think now, he said he wants to be more cautious. He's going to up his treatment. He's going to listen to the doctors more. So I think this was a learning experience for him, and I think for the Lakers too, where, at the end of the day, this team's seeding doesn't matter. They're going to make the playoffs. They're most likely going to have home court. Whether they're the 4 seed or the 1 seed, ultimately, I don't think really matters, especially in a season where we don't necessarily know if we're going to even have fans in the playoffs. So, I think for the Lakers, it's about keeping AD healthy, keeping him in one piece. You don't want to mess with an Achilles. It's arguably the worst injury in basketball. And, I think as long as he's healthy come playoff time, I think you like this team's chances against anybody. But, if he's not, then that's where I think the Lakers become vulnerable. And, maybe they have an early exit because of that.
Speaking of the Lakers, and this is more of a broad-based question about where they're at right now, because it's no secret their offense doesn't mirror the Brooklyn Nets and what the Brooklyn Nets are doing offensively. It's a very different situation there. Are you at all worried? And do you think the Lakers are at all worried that the lack of perimeter shooting and the lack of just shooters in general is going to eventually come back to bite them when it didn't in the bubble last year?
Potentially. I think I want to see their shooting normalize a little bit, just because they've been so up and down. Like, they started the season off scorching, where they were top five in 3-point shooting percentage for the first, like, you know, I don't know, three and a half weeks. And then since then, they've been like bottom five. And it's just like, they can't, you know, it's like they can't have a just normal shooting night. It's either they're shooting the lights out or they're shooting incredibly poorly. And I think, you know, obviously that'll kind of even out over the course of the season. But I think there's a lot of noise with that, because it's just hard to tell, you know, because they had a lot of guys that on paper look like better shooters, like Alex Caruso, Kyle Kuzma, KCP, like all these guys improved from last regular season to the bubble, and then continued from the bubble into this regular season. But now those guys are kind of cooled off, and it's like, you know, are they more of last regular season, you know, shooting level, or are they more the bubble shooting level? And I think that is going to ultimately dictate whether the Lakers need to make another move or not. Because I think, to your point, you know, when you're looking at a closing lineup, you know, on paper, it's probably AD, LeBron, KCP, Alex Caruso, and Dennis Schroeder. And I like, you know, that looks good on paper, but if those three guys are struggling to shoot and space the floor around LeBron and AD, like, you know, you're very beatable. Like, we've seen teams double them and blitz them and really try to make other guys make plays. And, you know, I think that's why the Lakers brought in Dennis and why they brought in Trez to kind of alleviate some of that. And it's worked at times, but it hasn't been the most seamless process. So I think this upcoming stretch without AD, that they have 9 games before the All-Star break, it's a pretty tough stretch. I think there's only like two projected, you know, I think like bottom five teams. Every other team is in the playoff contention, or, you know, they got the Nets, they got the Jazz, they got the Suns. Like, they got some tough matchups, and I'm interested to see just kind of who steps up, how do they handle that, and you know, can someone show something that they haven't necessarily shown with AD in the lineup? And if they don't, and they continue to struggle, and nobody steps up, like, that's where you have that, okay, we need to add another piece. And everyone talks about the center spot. I think they're going to be fine, especially when they shift AD to the five eventually. But to me, it is that probably another wing. I think they're a 3-and-D wing short, you know, a guy with some size, because a lot of their perimeter guys are like 6'5 and below. So someone in that 6'7 range, you know, rangy, can hit threes, can defend multiple positions. And those guys don't grow on trees. They're hard to find. But if the Lakers were able to add a guy like that, I think that they would, you know, certainly solidify themselves, in my opinion, as the clear favorite. Right now, I think they're the favorite, but I don't know if they're the clear favorite over, like, you know, say the Clippers or the Nets or whoever else you want to throw in there. So I think adding a piece like that would elevate them for sure.
Interesting. Let's switch gears a little bit. So Andre Drummond, he has been pulled. Blake Griffin has been pulled. This could be like a two-parter, but Toronto, it's not like it makes a lot of sense. Some things in basketball just make sense, and you hear it and you're like, oh, right, the Raptors need a big. This makes sense. They can get away from the relying on Chris Boucher a little bit too much, and he can go back to a limited role with the second unit. And then you can pull Baines from the rotation and just have him as an injury guy, just if something does happen with Drummond. But he does make a lot of sense there. And the idea of a Drummond Pascal Siakam front court makes you think what, Jovan?
I guess, like, potentially a frisky team that can get to the second round. Like, you know, I'm really interested in the move, just because I thought you kind of figured with the way the season has gone. I mean, we kind of thought this was going to be the case last season, that Toronto would potentially be sellers. But then you thought, you know, okay, last year, you know, they couldn't make the conference finals. It was a 7-game series, but it felt like that was kind of their ceiling. And, you know, looking at the way they started this year, like, you know, currently they're the 8th seed at 12-15. You know, I think as currently constructed, you know, to me look like a first round out. You know, I don't see who they're going to beat in that top 3 or 4 in the East right now. So I guess, I mean, Drummond makes them better, you know, depending on, I guess, you know, how they get him, whether it's a trade or a buyout, whatever. But I think I just like, okay, so you get Drummond and are you better than Philly? Are you better than Milwaukee? Are you better than Brooklyn? Like, no. Like maybe Boston. But now you have to start winning games and actually get back up into that like 4 or 5 range. So, I mean, I like it. Like, I guess it makes sense. You know, he's not like, if you're looking at the way like Marc Gasol and Serge Ibaka fit next to Pascal, you know, Drummond doesn't offer that same level of versatility. You know, he is mobile and athletic, but he doesn't have that stretch. He is more of a paint bound, you know, guy, a rim runner, roller, offensive rebounder. So, you know, he is going to affect their spacing for sure. And obviously, you know, we've never really seen him on a good team in a good defensive system. So I would be interested to see kind of how that, you know, maybe Nick Nurse can bring out the defensive potential in Andre Drummond and really make him a high level defender. But I don't know. Like, I guess if they want to stay competitive and try to make the second round, like, sure, I guess I like it. But I kind of was expecting they'd be sellers and maybe, you know, starting to rebuild a little bit around some of the younger guys, but it doesn't seem like they're interested in that.
Yeah, I also think it signals that Kyle Lowry is not going anywhere this season at the very least, which is interesting because he's an interesting trade chip for a lot of teams like a Philly or whoever, but it looks like they are going to be buyers, not sellers. Blake, our guy Blake Griffin, rough year. He's miserable in Detroit. Not the same guy he was even just 2 years ago. They're going to have to attach some stuff to get him out of Detroit, it looks like. But where do you hope Blake winds up, Jovan? As someone who covered him for years, where do you want to see Blake?
So I have a list here, actually, of 10 teams, and I'm curious, maybe rapid fire your thoughts on, because I think you can make a case for him on any of these 10, which is
okay.
You know, a third of the league. Austin?
No.
Brooklyn?
No.
I think that'd be funny.
It would Dallas? Be funny, but I just don't know. Like, no, I don't like the fit there. No, I like PJ Tucker in Brooklyn. That's what I'm kind of hoping happens. Next one.
Dallas.
Don't hate it.
Yeah, I think that you know, it like.
Is he better than Dwight Powell at this point? I think he's like a better version of Dwight Powell at this point, maybe.
Yeah, in theory, I think like when you're looking at Blake and his strengths and weaknesses, and the type of big that would fit well with him, it's Kristaps Porzingis. And obviously, yeah. Kristaps Porzingis is kind of a shell of himself right now. But you know, I think you can play inside outside with those guys. You know, Kristaps' size. You know, would help Blake. I mean, neither of them are great rebounders. You know,
both
Blake's kind of dipped
with
on that.
No
end.
Injury problems, so that's good.
I mean, it's not the cleanest thing, but I think if you're Dallas, like your season's kind of slipping away, and you might need to take a gamble. And you know, adding a guy like Blake, you're already kind of all in on offense. So I think
I don't.
This one's
it.
Fun. Golden State.
I figured they were going to be on your list. No, just because he would eat too many minutes up from Wiseman. I guess with the Looney stuff, depending on what happens there and what his injury stuff is, I guess it wouldn't hurt. I don't know. I that one's not as clean as I like Dallas the most so far.
Okay, Miami.
No, I think
he's a Heat culture guy.
But that's not what they really need. I want Miami to get more playmakers in the backcourt. I don't know. I don't really think they need more bigs like Blake. They already got a lot of bigs.
Milwaukee.
Sugar Ray Leonard, Roberto Duran, Marvelous Marvin Hagler, and Thomas Hearns. Legends, whose four-way rivalry defined one of the greatest eras in boxing history. Relive their decade of dominance in the new Showtime sports documentary, The Kings, a four-part series premiering Sunday, June 6th, only on Showtime.
Well, Bobby Portis,
I went like good. I went like good teams here. I wasn't because I think if Blake's leaving Detroit, he's not going to go to another like, you know, lottery team.
Yeah,
he wants to be on a playoff team.
I don't hate Milwaukee, but I would hope that they would use him in the Bobby Portis role. But then again, I'm like, are we sure he's better than Bobby Portis is for Milwaukee at this point? So I don't know. I mean, I guess, I don't know. That's tough. I would say second behind Dallas so far.
Okay. Philly reunited with Doc Rivers.
What is their relationship like? Were they, was that better than Chris Paul?
It was a bad. Blake and Doc was worse than Chris and Doc, actually.
Ooh, interesting. Okay, then I'm going to say no.
Yeah, I mean, you wonder if they, you know, had reconciled, but I also wonder what Blake is looking for in terms of role, because for as bad as he's been this season, he has had some moments where he's looked like the old Blake. You know, it's been few and far between, but I would guess that he still views himself as a starter, and that's still probably important to him. So, you know, I think especially if he's going to take a pay cut and, you know, seek out a contending team or at least a decent playoff team, like I think he's going to want a decent role. So I think that's where some of these fits get complicated. Phoenix. Chris Paul, baby.
I don't want to see sad Lob City. So no to me. That's going to be a no for me.
Yeah, I mean, I think like...
Oh, well, hold on. Frank? There is an off-the-court thing here, because I think Blake and Devin Booker have dated the same girl.
That's true. That is, well, and one is currently dating her. So,
that might be a problem.
Yeah, that's true. That's fair. Portland just going all in on offense. And
I don't hate Portland.
Yeah.
That's number two for me behind Dallas. I'm going to go there number two for me behind Dallas. I don't hate that one.
Okay, and then last one, Utah as just
no,
I don't love
no,
their
no.
backup.
Yeah, no, they need a wing. Rotation. No, they just need a wing. They need we're going to talk about who they need in a second, and it's going to be crazy what they would have to throw to get him. You didn't say the team that I thought you were going to – like my number one for them.
Who?
The Knicks. Like, they're a playoff team that starts today. Like, put him with Tibbs, like the Taj Gibson stuff. Like, he could play a bunch of it. He could close for the Knicks right now. Put him with Julius Randle. They already are a veteran heavy team. Like, who's he going to steal minutes from? Kevin Knox?
It is a big... I mean, I guess I'm not personally... If I had to guess right now, I will have the Knicks out of the playoffs. I'm not giving up on.
I think they're
like,
gonna make it.
I think you have your top five, and I think those top five are locks. And I know we're supposed to touch on Boston, but I think Toronto, especially if they end up getting Drummond, becomes a sixth lock. I think Miami is going to turn it around if they ever get healthy. But like, I mean, this seems like to me a season where they're just going to end up as like the 7 or 8 seed, and you know it's going to be a disappointment, but. I don't see how Miami misses the playoffs. And then when you're looking at like that eighth spot, it's like New York, Charlotte, Chicago, Atlanta. Yeah. I still personally like Atlanta the most out of those teams. So
well, you haven't watched much Atlanta recently. Yeah, Bamboo. I know they're not to the 2021 Atlanta Hawks.
I know. I mean, I saw them blow that that game against the Lakers. Like I know, but I mean, yeah, I don't know. I guess. I feel like the Knicks are the ultimate, like, you know how there's some teams, you know, like the Bucks and the Clippers where we're like, okay, we don't really care what you do in the regular season. Like, let's see what you do in the postseason. For me with the Knicks, it's like, I don't care what you do for the first 40 games of the season. I want to see where you're at in game 60, game 70. And I mean, I guess in this case it, you know, would be 72, whatever. But like, if we're in early April and they're still in contention for the playoffs or you know in that 6-7 range, like I will be impressed. I will come on this podcast, I will apologize to Knicks fans.
Yes,
but I feel like we've seen this movie before with them, where maybe not this deep into the season, but they've had some decent starts in recent years, like where they're at least like seeming a little competitive and frisky. And I know they have Tibbs, and I know
he's gonna
push. Little bit different, but he is gonna push. But I mean, maybe I'm wrong, but yeah, I mean, I guess Blake and Julius, it's kind of weird because Julius has been compared to Blake. So,
yeah.
You know, for a lot of his career, and there's a lot of skill overlap between those two, but yeah, I mean, I guess in the East, you're never really out of the playoffs.
No, you're not.
It's a crazy thing.
Speaking of the Hawks, they're reportedly only willing to trade John Collins, who's on the last year of his contract. He'll be a restricted free agent this summer, for a lottery pick. Jovan, I'm going to go ahead and say on the record that the Atlanta Hawks will not get a first round lottery pick for a big who wants to be a point forward.
Yeah.
He's just not that guy.
I don't know what they're going to do. I do like, again, I haven't seen much of the Hawks this year, but I thought I was with all the offseason moves. I thought they made sense. It was like, this is a unique situation where a team has an enticing young core and they add some veterans to it. And you kind of are threading the needle of, we're not quite contender level, but we look like we can be a bottom playoff team, get these guys some playoff reps and then we also have some flexibility with the salary cap where it's not like, all these guys are signing, 2-year deals where we're not married to them long term. It's obviously has not worked recently. You had the Trey, John kind of media narrative earlier in the season, and it does seem like, he's the odd man out at this point. But I don't see them getting a lottery pick. I could see them maybe getting a lottery protected first round pick. But a lottery pick is I think probably too high, especially in this draft.
The Mavericks actually make a lot of sense for him too. When I was looking around the league, I'm like, who makes the most sense? It's probably Boston and Dallas to me. I've seen Houston thrown around a lot, but I just don't understand. Houston's still just like four moves away from me having a good read on where they're going and what they want to actually do. But when you actually look around the league, you're like, who's giving up any kind of asset, and who's also going to throw a crazy offer sheet at him this summer? I don't know. I think he's a really interesting case study. I don't think there's going to be nearly as many suitors as John Collins might suspect and Travis Schlink is hoping to get, but you got to start high. Andre Roberson helping Brooklyn, yes or no?
No. Yeah.
They're getting to the bottom of the barrel, man. Like, they are, the fact that Andre Roberson is popping up in Brooklyn news and notes, I'm like, oh, this is a problem now.
Yeah, I mean, I'm pulling it up right now. A career 25.5% three-point shooter. Shot 22%. His last two seasons were 22% and 21%. I mean, you're just unplayable. And I mean, I get that they need defense and they need defense on the perimeter. They need defense on the interior. But I just think at this point he looks cooked. He hasn't really played meaningful basketball in 4 years. It's sad because I think he was turning a corner where he was one of those guys that, in spite of how bad he was as a shooter, he still made a positive impact and it was still a guy you would want in a playoff rotation. But, until he shows that again, I'm going to err on the side of caution and just say I think he's probably done.
I agree. But it will be interesting to see where they turn in the buyout market. How worried are you, Jovan, about the currently, as of this recording, 500 Boston Celtics?
Well, to bring up an earlier point, I'd be more worried if they weren't in the East. They're 13-13 and they're still the 5 seed. If they were in the West right now, they'd be the 9 seed. So I think I'm worried from a macro sense of, I don't think this team, as they're currently playing and seemingly currently constructed, a conference finals contender, which I've been very high on Boston the last 2 or 3 years. They've consistently been a conference finals pick for me, if not finals pick a couple of times. And, but this year I'm kind of officially out of they could make the second round, if not should make the second round, but I don't see them beating Philly, Milwaukee, or Brooklyn in a series right now. I think that that's probably their ceiling, when obviously with making the conference finals, multiple times over the past 4 years, you know, they're looking at making the finals and potentially winning a championship. And that to me just doesn't seem realistic. So, you know, and it's weird because, you know, Tatum's had, like, Tatum and Brown have had good years. I mean, I know Tatum's down a little bit, but I feel like you still trust him as like a top 15 guy. Brown has taken a step. Like there are some encouraging things there, but overall it just, you know, obviously hasn't worked out. You know, barely, you know, above neutral net rating, like 3-7 in the last 10 games. It's just it's not looking pretty for Boston right now.
Yeah, their offense just isn't working. You know who actually makes a lot of sense for them, but they'd have to part with some interesting pieces to do this. But Vucevic is quietly just putting together another crazy good season for Orlando. With no guards. Everyone's out. Everyone's hurt. Cole Anthony's playing meaningful minutes there. But he seems like somebody who actually makes a lot of sense for them. But they just need something else there. I see Miles Turner thrown around a lot, but I just don't think they have the... Like, you'd have to part with Marcus Smart, and I don't think you do Marcus Smart. For Miles Turner, who do you buy more based on what you thought about the Knicks and the Blake Griffin fit? I suspect, Jovan, that you are a bigger believer in old friend LaMelo Ball and the Charlotte Hornets than New York Knicks. What do you think?
Ooh, that is a good one. That's tough for me. I guess I'm going to say, I guess I'm more of a believer in the Knicks slightly, just because I think I wouldn't be surprised if Charlotte just, you know, fully turns the keys over to LaMelo and, you know, ends up trading, you know, be it Rozier or Devontae Graham and just kind of, not necessarily like a rebuild, but just a clearing out for him to fully, you know, just have no competition at that spot and be able to play even more than he already is. In which case, I think they would take a slight step back. And I also think to our earlier, you know, conversation, like Tibbs is going to be pedal to the metal the entire time. And, you know, if the Knicks are sniffing the playoffs, like who knows, they could be a factor in the buyout market. You know, it still is New York. It still is the Knicks. They still have that cachet. So, you know, I could potentially see them adding another guy like a Blake or someone else that could help them. So, I just think with the style of coaching and sort of, the approach to the season, I think the Knicks are just desperate to make the playoffs and basically at all costs, where Charlotte, I think it would be nice, but they have some flexibility to really, I think, dive into this young core and see what, you know, sort of their long-term, you know, potential is. So I guess I'm going to say the Knicks, but I don't feel great about either of them.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I guess I'm a bigger believer in New York because of the veteran aspect and because Randall's playing at an MVP or MVP all-star like level. Quickly is just an unreal find for them. And I actually think Derrick Rose is really good for them. And I think it's smart by Tibbs to play them together in the backcourt, and I'm interested to see what that development looks like. But I don't know. RJ's playing really well. He's developing. Tibbs, this is a good situation for him, and they're just so sneaky, veteran-heavy that part of me wonders, with LaMelo Ball in the starting lineup now, with the amount of youth, with PJ Washington and Bridges and Monk having good games every now and then, Devontae Graham still being pretty young. Like, you think about that group, and I'm always going to err, I guess, on the more veteran-heavy teams, at least in a year-over-year basis. So we shall see. Let's find a new home for somebody, Jovan. We mentioned Orlando a little bit, but is there someone that you're looking at on this Orlando roster that just, after the Markel injury, which was just brutal and feels like forever ago, no Isaac, no Markel, just devastated by injuries, let's find a new home either for somebody on Orlando or Cleveland. Who would you move if you could move them right now?
I think I move Vooch. You know, I think, well, Vooch or Aaron Gordon, you know, I think both guys are deserve to be in better places. You know, I think Aaron Gordon, it's just been like, I still don't really know what to make of him. I haven't sold all my stock. You know, I still have a couple shares left. And I would like to see him in a better, more competitive environment. And then, you know, I think to your point with Vooch, he's the type of guy that I think could, you know, really elevate. Like I look at, you know, Toronto, if there was a way to somehow get him there, or, you know, just one of the, like if one of these lower East teams, you know, I guess above Orlando, ended up getting him, I guess it would, it really would only be, what, New York, Charlotte, or Toronto. You know, I think that elevates that team to a playoff lock and you know, kind of makes them a little friskier. And honestly, same in the West, I guess, that depending on where he went. I don't really know. I'm looking, it's, I don't know, Dallas, Sacramento, like I mean, Golden State. Like, I don't know where he ends up, but San Antonio would be a fun fit. You know, he's a very Spurs-like player. But yeah, I mean, I just think he's the type of guy that can elevate a team in the playoff race into like in that like 6-7 range. And he's playing at an all-star level. And I think he's just basically wasting his career in Orlando right now. So I'd like to, as a fellow Trojan, I'd like to see him get out of there.
Interesting. I would just, the Aaron Gordon in Utah just is the obvious one. I wish there was a clean, easy way to get him there. And I just, that's the only way I'm going to take Utah seriously. Utah is not a finals contender without upgrading that wing spot. Like Royce O'Neal and Joe Ingles and Bojan are not going to be enough against the Lakers and the Clippers, and what they'll throw at them is just, it's just not going to be enough. But the Suns, who we mentioned, the Blazers, who we mentioned, right there in the middle of that Western Conference playoff push, Jovan, who has impressed you more? The Suns getting it together and putting it together a nice win streak, or the Blazers with their injuries, especially to their front court?
So I guess objectively, I would say Portland's probably more impressive with how many injuries they've had. You know, CJ, I think this was, this was the best CJ's ever played. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you just look at his numbers, this was his best start ever. And I think him playing at that level, you know, did change, because that's always kind of been my thing with Portland is I haven't historically been a big Portland guy. I do love the city, but the team itself, like I've kind of been like, you know, I'm one of those, when people kind of talk about the national media critics that kind of toss Portland to the side, like I'm on board with that. Like I've just been, okay, you have two small guards, so you have, you know, defensive liabilities in the playoffs. I love Nurkic, but you know, beyond that, until adding Covington this year, like they just haven't really had much on the wing. I do really like Gary Trent Jr., but yeah, I've just kind of been like, I don't really see, you know, like to me, I felt they got lucky playing a Denver team that was inexperienced, and it was sort of a fluky conference finals run where I thought the three best teams in the West were Golden State, Houston, and Utah, and they all ended up being on the same side of the bracket. And I think if any of those three had played Portland, they would have beat them, and they wouldn't have made the conference final. So you can't control your playoff path, but I just think they've kind of been living off that. So I'm personally not a big Portland guy. I'm probably going to have someone come after me on Twitter after saying that. But so I think overall, I'm more impressed with Phoenix. I buy them more. I think they look better than I thought. Like I thought they were a playoff team, but I was looking at them as like a 6 to 8 seed, not a potential 4 seed. And who knows, maybe even a 3 seed if one of the LA teams with some of the injuries they've had kind of drops. So Phoenix to me is like right there, might be the fourth best team in the West, where Portland, you know, even though they are the 5 seed right now, and they are doing that largely, you know, not being healthy, I do have, like, I've seen the Portland script before, and I have my concerns, and I think I would pick probably 5 or 6 teams in the West over them in a playoff series. So I'm, you know, I guess it is impressive for them to keep winning with you know, being so depleted, but if you're looking at like longer term, I think Phoenix has showed me something that I'm very encouraged by, and I think they're going to be a tough playoff out.
I think so too. I think for me, it's probably still Portland. I think Damian Lillard now, I mean, there are some weird Damian Lillard people that just really want to discredit Steph, and like Dame's actually what Steph really like. There's some weird back and forth on that. I don't know why you can't just appreciate both, but I will say Dame just getting to that point where it doesn't matter who goes down around him, he's still going to force this team into being a, not a Western Conference contender, but a Western Conference perennial playoff team, I think is still very impressive in its own right. Couple quick things. Lou Dort actually belongs in Utah, Jovan. I don't know if you watched the way this guy plays defense. Outside of Rayshon Tate, these two obvious guys that maybe casual basketball fans are not all that familiar with how good just defenders they both really are. Tate probably more so at this point, but he put Westbrook on lockdown this week. Lou Dort got his stuff with LeBron. I mean, do you remember that possession? And did you ask LeBron about Lou Dort and the way he defended him? Because like, that is ultimately what Utah needs, is that guy when they get matched up with Paul George, Kawhi Leonard, LeBron, like they need, maybe even KCP if it gets hot, like you need that right guy. And it's Lou Dort might be the guy that no one talks about, but like the guy that where Utah has to throw real assets to prime away from OKC.
Yeah, no, I love Lou Dort. He busted the Lakers' ass in both games of their home series at Staples Center. That's been the biggest growth in his game. Is you kind of saw it a little bit in the bubble in that Rockets series. You know, so some of the offensive stuff. Especially later in the series. But he really has improved as an offensive player, and he's not by any means like a knockdown shooter or anything, but he can put the ball on the floor. He can pump fake. He can drive. He can finish. He can finish through contact. He can finish around a rim protector. And that is a part of his game that I don't think we fully saw consistently last season. So, that was kind of the next step for him, because defensively he was, I mean, the dude was pressuring Harden full court and causing turnovers and, really making very impressive plays for a guy that young and, that inexperienced by NBA standards. So really it was just all about, can he hit open threes and not airball and, kind of be at least a decent offensive contributor. It doesn't have to be, double digit score or anything, but just, can you be competent? And I think he's shown this year he's competent, and he deserves to be in a playoff rotation. So I'm totally with you, whether it's Utah or someone else. I would love to get him out of there. Now, sadly, I think OKC is going to hold on to him. If I was OKC looking kind of moving forward, I want to keep Shea. I want to keep Dort. I want to keep Bazley. And, I'm still kind of deciding with some of these other guys. But, I'm very intrigued. Because I think he's a really good fit around Shea. Because it gives you, it gives you size. It gives you length. Both those guys can defend multiple positions. I think that the shooting is a little bit of a concern with kind of combining those two, although Shea has improved as a shooter. But I think he's the type of dirty work guy you want next to a Shea. I mean, I think there's a chance he could end up becoming like a PJ Tucker level, right? Where I don't know if he's ever going to be that type of shooter, but if he could and kind of get to that level of just as a spot up catch and shoot guy, he already has some of that PJ Tucker in him defensively. So I think he's a really good role player for, any future star in the league. So I think OKC is probably going to try to keep on, hold on to him.
Yeah. I am always team do not keep and pay role guys when you're rebuilding. Those are not the ones. You can't pay everybody and you can't, I don't know. He's just not going to be there. When the Thunder's picks, those lottery picks that are coming their way in 3 to 4 years, like by the time those guys develop, and Lou Dort will be 30 plus, and it's just you. I don't think those are the guys you keep around long term. I think you just develop those guys, and then you trade for veterans who can help and on shorter deals who can just help the Shays of the world. But I think you sell high on the Lou Dorts, and you're like, hey, that's who we are. We can develop these guys from our blue team and all that stuff. That is what I would do, and I think there's going to be a real possibility that they throw real assets. I think Lou Dort, here's a take for you, Lou Dort helps more playoff teams, more playoff contenders right now than John Collins would. John Collins will get the headlines, but I think Lou Dort swings series for teams depending on where he goes. Is that fair?
That is almost as bold as you picking the Pacers to be the one seed.
Okay. Well, you know,
I don't know. I don't know if you remember that.
I do remember that. And the Pacers are a very good basketball team. They're a top four team, and people had them out of the playoffs, Jovan. They're a top four team in the East. They're going to finish. They might have home court this season. So, and that's without Victor Oladipo and no Caris LeVert. Like, Caris, full season of him, Domantas Sabonis and Miles Turner. Just, can you get enough Doug McDermott turning into a slasher and driver, and Malcolm Brogdon, the president, doing everything he's doing, the Holiday brothers killing it? Like, I'm not eating crow on that, Jovan. Like, it, a healthy Victor Oladipo, who's not trying to force his way out of there. Like, that's a walk in the park, number one overall seed, sir.
I'm not gonna disagree with you.
But yeah, no, I just,
it's your podcast. You're right.
Hey, you know, it's Chase Thomas podcast and family and friends. Everybody's, we're all the same. last thing, we'll wrap up here, Jovan. The team that you used to cover over there in the Staples Center, I think they play in the same arena that the Lakers do. So correct me if I'm wrong there, but, the Clippers are just fine. Like, when I watch them, I'm like, yeah, this makes sense. Ty Lue's an upgrade. Ty Lue is doing things that Doc probably should have adjusted to. The rotations are better. Paul George is better. You know, they're fine. Serge is great. Like, Nick Batum, we'll see where he's at 4 months from now. But Pat Bev, less responsibility. Lou Williams, less responsibility. I think they're probably a move to make as they continue consolidating this team from less about their depth and more about their stars and making sure they maximize them. Like, do you have any real strong Clippers thoughts? Or is it just like, yeah, I mean, at this point, we know they have top 10 guys. But it's just, we have to see what happens in the playoffs. Like, everything about them is just kind of boring until we see them in postseason again.
Yeah. I mean, I think a big development with them has been the defense. You know, they were a bottom 10 defense for a majority of the season until recently. They've now crept up to 11th in defensive rating. And I think that's significant just because, I did have some pause with, you know, do they have the defensive personnel? Like, obviously, Serge is an upgrade over Montrezl Harrell, but, you know, kind of beyond that, like, I think the questions for me are, you know, purely on the role players. You know, I know, like, Kawhi, I thought was having arguably the best postseason until that game seven. Like, I thought you could put his postseason up against LeBron's or Giannis's or whoever. And I guess Giannis, you know, didn't have the best series against Miami, but like, I just felt at that point you could put him against whoever, you know, pick your star. And, you know, Kawhi was having as good, if not a better series than that player. Then of course, you know, pancaked in game seven and just, you know, didn't play well. And then of course, Paul George, playoff P and pandemic P and all that stuff. Like, you know, he still has to prove himself, I think, with some of his recent performances. You know, I think his total body of work is not as bad as people make it sound. He has had some stinkers, and those are the kind of moments that people have held on to. But I think those guys are going to be fine. I think, you know, Kawhi is still a top five, if not top three guy. PG is somewhere in that, like, 10 to 15 range. But it's the other guys of, you know, how does it fully translate into the postseason? And, you know, we've seen Lou Williams, you know, struggle postseason after postseason. And it feels like the ship has sailed on that, where, like, I no longer trust Lou as a postseason guy. Pat Bev, you know, struggles with injuries and foul trouble. And it's like, if he can avoid both of those, he's a very productive and useful player. But it seems like he's all, you know, one of those two is constantly getting in his way. And then beyond that, like, the Nick Batum thing has been fun. You know, we haven't seen him perform at this level for a full season in, you know, a few years. So I'm interested to see if he can keep that up. I think Serge has been a great fit. And then beyond that, I'm kind of like, well, like, I don't know how I feel about Luke Kennard in a playoff series or Reggie Jackson or Pat Patterson or, you know, Marcus Moore. So, like, I think there are some question marks with some of the role guys. You know, some of those guys underperformed last season. Some of them haven't been in, you know, these high pressure playoffs, you know, situations in multiple years, if not ever. So for me, I'm with you in that, like, I think ultimately they are a let's wait and see team. But for me, it's really like, let's wait and see how the supporting cast performs. Cause I think that's where my only questions are with them. I don't doubt Kawhi. I think PG is going to bounce back. But beyond that, I don't know how reliable these guys are. And some of them, I think, might just be performing better in the regular season than they will come playoff time.
Yeah, we shall see. Jovan, what can we check out from you this week on theathletic.com?
Well, I think this is going to be Anthony Davis week. So you can check out my last piece that went up this morning. I went into the injury, if you're intrigued on the specifics of some of it and, you know, why he played and sort of, I guess, some of that, wrote about that. And then by the time this, well, I don't know when you're posting this, but by Tuesday morning, I will have a story up looking on how the Lakers are going to try to survive without Anthony Davis and have a breakdown on, you know, field goal attempts and points and minutes and just kind of which guys are going to see an increase in role and which guys might not and kind of sussing through all of that. So, yeah, it's a very Anthony Davis centric week. And then we got Lakers Nets on Thursday, which now some of the sizzle on that one is taken out, but I think should still be a fun matchup. So that's kind of my content for the week.
All right. Well, go do that and subscribe to theathletic.com if you are not already for that guy over there in the choppy waters of Catalina. Jovan Bua for myself here in Knoxville, Tennessee. That is all I've got, good sir. We will talk again very soon.
Yes, sir.
Nicely done, nephew. Chase Thomas Podcast. Hell yeah.
Sugar Ray Leonard, Roberto Duran, Marvelous Marvin Hagler, and Thomas Hearns. Legends, whose four-way rivalry defined one of the greatest eras in boxing history. Relive their decade of dominance in the new Showtime sports documentary, The Kings, a four-part series premiering Sunday, June 6th, only on Showtime.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.